This is number 23-50137. We'll go ahead and begin. You all know the lighting system here. The green light continue. The yellow light means you should start thinking about wrapping up. When the red light comes on, we'd ask you to complete the sentence that you're in and conclude. Also, please assume for all counsel that we have read your briefs and we are familiar with the subject matter and the issues raised and the key cases that you've cited in your briefing. So if you could tailor your remarks accordingly, that would be appreciated. All right, Ms. Kimmelman, if you'd like to begin, you've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal, but you may begin now.
Yes, thank you, Honor. Kristen Kimmelman for Erica Martinez. On appeal, Ms. Martinez raised two issues, challenging the denial of her suppression motion and also the application of a sentencing guidelines enhancement. I would like to focus on the sentencing issue, although I can, of course, address other matters of interest to the court. And so she was convicted of alien transporting under 8 U.S.C. 1324, and the pre-sentence report applied guideline 2L1.1B6. She objected to that because that enhancement only applies when the offense involved intentionally or recklessly creating a substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury to another. And the facts established in the PSR, which are not disputed, do not rise to that level and do not support the enhancement. Those facts are that six people were traveling in a 2017 Toyota Corolla that was designed for a total of five people. Two individuals, Ms. Martinez and her mother, were in the front seats, and four Mexican citizens were in the back seat of that Toyota Corolla. When the agent approached the vehicle to inspect the passengers after having pulled it over on the ranch road, the agent saw that three individuals were lying on the back seat of the Toyota Corolla, and one person was lying on the floorboard. And so that's what we know of the configuration in the
car. What in the record explains the configuration of the four people in the back seat? Are there photographs? You mentioned the agent's testimony. Is that's what he saw when they...
So there was no testimony and there were no pictures. The PSR recites, probably from investigative documents, that this is what the agent reported. There was a suppression hearing, but it wasn't discussed at the suppression hearing what configuration the passengers were in, although we do know that at least when the agent saw the vehicle, he didn't see the heads of people in the back seat. So we do know that, but we don't have statements from the passengers themselves, as exists in some cases, nor from the co-defendants about what the positioning was in that vehicle. And so under this court's precedent, that's insufficient. The most familiar case or similar case, Ramirez, was cited in the PSR objection letter. That also had four individuals in the back seat area of a similar small sedan, a Dodge Avenger. In Ramirez, three people were sitting on that back seat, and one passenger was lying on top of the laps. And it was established in Ramirez that all four of those individuals were not wearing seat belts. Here, we just know that the person who was lying on the floor necessarily did not have a seat belt on. And so in that case, the court actually reversed on plain error review because this court's precedent was so clear.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the district judge likened it to stacked like cordwood, I think was the phrase. Would you take issue with that description?
Yes, we would, and we did also at the sentencing hearing because the PSR doesn't describe them stacked like cordwood. It just says they were lying in the back seat. To me, the most natural picture that comes to my mind of that is that they were seated, hunched over at the waist, lying on top of each other. I don't know if that's correct or not because we just don't know. The court at the sentencing hearing also was trying to imagine how that person on the floorboard was positioned with regard to the other individual's feet. On top or underneath were some of the scenarios that the district court considered. When the court did not consider, which is also possible, is that that person was in front of those feet.
Can the district court apply the enhancement if only one of the four people is transported in a dangerous position or otherwise qualifies under the description of the enhancement?
So,
or does it have to be all four of the people on the back seat?
It does not have to be all four, but even the person who is on the floor would not qualify under this court's reading. Solis Garcia, a seminal case in this area, had four individuals in the back area of a minivan, so not even a compartment that was designed to hold passengers, and those people were lying down, and this court said that was insufficient because the risk that this enhancement is supposed to apply to is more than just the ordinary risk of riding around in a motor vehicle without a seatbelt. And in Ramirez, of course, there was that one person on top of the laps, so even less obstructed from possibly being ejected from the vehicle if a crash occurred or something to that effect. But the court reversed in plain error on that case, because this court has been exceedingly clear that this is not substantial overcrowding. That is going to at least be more than three people under Solis Garcia and Ramirez and Rodriguez. And then also that just not wearing seatbelts, as the government concedes, is insufficient. Now, this court has applied the enhancement when there are aggravating factors, but those aggravating factors are exceedingly different than what exists here. For example, there in Zuniga a Mesquita, there were the boxes, heavy boxes, the district court found, stacked completely around the people in the back area such that they could not exit. And some of those boxes had bottles that if there was an accident could become projectiles. That was dangerous. Garza, the government argues, is close to this case. I would disagree. Those were two men on their stomachs underneath the back seats of a vehicle with the child on a car seat on top. And there were statements from one of those passengers in the PSR that it was hot, uncomfortable, and he had limited mobility. And so with that configuration and those statements from the passenger, and also knowing that those people had been in that position for, I think, at least 40 minutes, then this court said that affirmed the enhancement based on the district court's findings there. Mata is another case where there's one individual in the backseat area covered with blankets, and also the aggravating factor, a heavy, clunky stroller that the district court saw pictures of and made a determination that it was too heavy for that person to easily move, and that if there had been an accident and it had started flying around, it would have caused more injury to that person than if that person had just been covered by blankets. Here, there is no immobile object obstructing the passengers in the back seat from exiting the two doors on either side of that back seat, or that could have possibly caused extra danger to them if an accident had occurred. I think the other interesting point from those cases and the type of aggravating factors is that it was necessarily something the defendant knew about and was aware of in the manner of transportation. Whereas here, what we know Ms. Martinez knew was that four people were in her back seat. There's no indication that she directed them to lie down or that she knew they were lying down when the car was moving, if indeed they were. And so without more evidence of what that back seat actually looked like, were the front seats, you know, pushed to the forward, giving that person more room or not? And we can assume that the three people on the back seat were seat belted, they had those available to them. This does not rise to the level that warrants the enhancement, and that's why we would ask this court to reverse and remand for resentencing. We are asking for resentencing without the enhancement, a limited scope on remand, and I believe that is warranted because it was objected to clearly in the PSR objection. The standard was clear. I'm relying on the same cases that were in that PSR objection letter. And the objection letter was filed 5 months before sentencing. The government had ample opportunity to call a witness or gather any other evidence, if there was any other evidence, from the discovery in that case, and it didn't do so. And so that is the argument with regard to the sentencing enhancement. If the court has no other questions about that issue, on the suppression issue, just to note, I think the primary disagreement between the government and us has to do with this proximity to the border factor. of course, she was stopped within the 50 miles of the border, and there are cases saying that if it is more than 50 miles away, then it's not a reasonable inference that the person came from the border. This court's early cases, Melendez-Gonzalez from 1984 and Jones from 1998 and many others, focus on the vital element being that the car had recently come from the border. The agent was asked at the suppression hearing if he had evidence that it had just come from the border, and the agent answered no. And then the district court in its order said that the agent believed the car had come from the border and that that was a reasonable belief. And so it appears that there was a misunderstanding of that, and given the importance of the proximity of the border factor, our position is that it is more towards the neutral category because of the other towns and things that people go to and travel to that were between where Ms. Martinez was stopped, north of Brackettville, and the U.S.-Mexico border. And if the court has has no further questions about the suppression motion, I would like to just touch on the extension of the surrender date, if the court allows me to. I think the government and I have different interpretations of the limited remand order. My understanding of the limited remand order that this court issued was that it wanted written reasons from the district court to then ultimately decide the issue about whether the extension request denial should be affirmed or reversed. And so my understanding was that this court still had jurisdiction over the matter and could issue a decision in that case. I may have been mistaken, but that was based on the order not saying that the district court's order was affirmed, and the clerk's letter to the district clerk saying that the case was placed in abeyance pending the written reasons from the clerk. And of course, there has been no mandate in that case. And so this is an unusual situation where the district court was very gracious by allowing Ms. Martinez to surrender 7 months after sentencing because she was set to give birth in July. And then when we realized that it could be conceivably possible to get a decision on the case before she had to surrender, that's why we requested the additional 30 days. And the position in the district court and thus on appeal was that this falls under the bond pending the execution of a sentence, 3143A, not bond pending appeal. So obviously we did not tailor our request to those demands. I still think there is a colorable argument that those factors have been met because we did cite evidence of her being on pretrial release without any issues for over 2 years, and probation did not oppose the request for the 30-day extension. And the sentencing issue, at least, I think is a close question of substantial law and fact and meets that criteria. And given especially the guideline retroactivity impending of the zero-point offender guideline amendment, it's possible that Ms. Martinez's ultimate guideline range would be 0 to 6 months instead of what she was sentenced under and ultimately got 18 months, making it possible that that she wouldn't be able to be resentenced while the appeal process was pending, certainly to include remanding her from BOP back. So if there are no further questions, I've reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, counsel. We will now hear from Mr. Fowler on behalf of the government.
May it please the court, Charles Fowler for the United States. Based on the facts in the PSR, the district court found that Ms. Martinez was transporting non-citizens who were stacked and were tightly packed into the back seat, a very tight space of a compact car. It was a Toyota Corolla. And that based on those findings, further concluded that the way these individuals were being transported increased their risk of injury in an accident, and in particular made it difficult to get out of that car were something to happen. And the government's view is that those findings were not clearly erroneous and support the enhancement here. The real crux of the dispute, I believe, is how to treat some of the district court's remarks at sentencing. In the government's view, the district court was drawing reasonable inferences on some of these key factual points from the facts that were in the PSR. And so, as defense counsel noted, the facts in the PSR themselves are undisputed. And those are that when the officer approached the vehicle, he observed three individuals in the back seat lying down. Shortly thereafter, in questioning those individuals, he identified a fourth laying on the floorboard.
PSR is the only source of facts that we would have to look at before we get to the district judge's comments.
That is correct, Your Honor.
No other evidentiary basis or documents that were submitted or anything of that nature?
That is correct, Your Honor. And in fact, the district court explicitly stated at sentencing that it was relying entirely for its facts on paragraph 7 of the PSR. So that's quite clear from the record.
And the objection, in light of your comments, maybe counsel will cover it on rebuttal, but the objection was not to the facts set forth in the PSR. It was to whether the enhancement, those facts fell within the scope of the potential enhancement.
I believe that's part of the objection, Your Honor. I think that there was also a dispute in the district court at sentencing with regard to the inferences that should be drawn from the facts in the PSR. For example, on what I believe is really a key factual point here, that the individuals lying on the back seat were stacked on top of each other. Defense counsel at sentencing pushed back on that characterization, and the district court reasoned, and I think this was just the district court showing its work, so to speak, on the factual inference it was drawing, said, the way I see it, given the very tight space, this is a compact car, you can't have three grown men lying on this back seat without them being stacked on top of each other to some extent. In the government's view, that is a reasonable inference from the facts in the PSR, and under this court's precedence, reasonable inferences from the facts are themselves fact findings that are reviewed for clear error and treated as though they are any other fact findings. So I think that was the district court resolving a factual dispute at sentencing, and from there, I think the defense objection could also be characterized as objecting to the legal question of applying the facts to the enhancement, but I think there's kind of a factual and a legal component that was going on at sentencing, and I think that's sort of the overlay of the appeal as well. So I think, again, a couple of key inferences. One, that the individuals were stacked. Two, that they were not wearing seat belts. That was another, I believe, reasonable inference that the district court drew from the facts in the PSR. That's at ROA 196. The court, as the government observed at sentencing, the individual on the floor, of course, it would be impossible for that person to have a seat belt on. I think it was equally reasonable to conclude, based on the horizontal position of the individuals on the back seat, at a bare minimum, that they couldn't have been properly restrained. But in the district court's view, they were not wearing seat belts. Again, the district court made a finding as to how tight these individuals must be packed in the vehicle, given its size and given that there were four of them back there. I think further support for that comes from the agent's observation, which was provided. It's in the PSR. It's also in testimony at the suppression hearing that whoever was in the back seat of this car, there was enough packed in there that the car was riding low. I think that's just additional factual support for the conclusion as to just how tightly folks were packed in the back seat of this car. I think it's also a factor that could contribute to how safely that car could be operated if there's enough people back there that the rear suspension is visibly compressed. I think that that's something that could escalate the risk of an accident. And of course, from there, the district court made the findings that it would be very difficult for these people to untangle themselves They would begin tumbling around in the event of an accident. You can imagine three individuals laid horizontally on the back seat would go tumbling over into the floorboard where there is yet another person laying. And so I think under this court's precedence, the facts here, including the reasonable inferences from the facts in the PSR, readily support the enhancement. I will touch on Ramirez, which defense counsel discussed at some length, and I think there are several key distinctions that separate this case from Ramirez. First and foremost, that the district court there didn't make any findings that would support the enhancement. So you don't have the district court reasoning through what the facts must have meant for how these individuals were positioned, and so no findings to support the enhancement. A few other matters, there was no one on the floor. I think that's particularly important here, given that we did have someone in the very tight rear floorboard space of a compact sedan. And in addition, in Ramirez, the driver briefly attempted to flee and then got into an accident, and all the individuals who had been positioned in the backseat of the car immediately got out and fled. So in this case, you have the district court doing what it's able to do from the facts that were described in the PSR to determine how easily or not easily it would have been for these individuals to exit the car in the event of an accident, whereas in Ramirez, whatever other information the court might have had about that factor, we know for certain that they did immediately exit in the event of an accident, which would tend to negate the inference that they were positioned in a way that would have made that difficult. We don't have that factor here. The closest case factually to this case is this court's decision in Garza, I believe, which involved two individuals on the floorboard in the rear of an extended cab truck with a child placed on the seat. I think there are some very close parallels in terms of the district court's observations here and there in terms of that these individuals were packed tightly, they were laying horizontally, the individuals there were on the floorboard just as one of the people here was on the floorboard. Garza is, by the way, the only case I could find that dealt with someone on the floorboard with additional people on the seat. In that case, it was just a child, which presumably could come tumbling down into the seat, causing it to be very difficult to exit. In that case, and I think three adults lying horizontally on the seat here would create similar risks for the individual on the floor in terms of ability to escape or risk of injury. And so the government believes that that's probably the closest case. We cited Mata as well in our brief, which involved a stroller on top of an individual in the cargo area of a Ford Escape. I think it was a more spacious area, but the district court there engaged in a similar kind of exercise to what it did here, reasoning through the facts that were presented in the PSR to determine that that it would be difficult to escape, that the injury risk would be elevated, and this court deferred to the district court's characterizations of the facts in that case. I believe it should do so again here. If the court has no further questions on the sentencing issue, I'll touch briefly on the couple of other issues in the case, the first being the suppression issue. I don't think the issue of proximity to the border is a particularly close issue. This court's more recent precedents have been very clear that anything under 50 miles from the border at the time of the stop weighs heavily in favor of reasonable suspicion. We have a little bit more here in that the car here was driving northbound, which is another circumstance suggesting it was coming from the border. The agent's statement at the suppression hearing that he had no other indication, no evidence that the car had just come from the border, I don't think carries as much weight as defense counsel is imputing to it. I think he meant I have no direct evidence, I have no GPS, I have the circumstances, but I don't have anything else telling me this car came directly from the border. I don't have an admission, for example, on that point, but I think this court has repeatedly concluded under similar circumstances, a car 30, 40 miles from the border heading northbound is a factor that weighs heavily. But even without that factor, I think the totality of the circumstances readily supports reasonable suspicion here, in particular given that the officer was on his way at the time to help out with a couple of other cars that just really had a striking resemblance to this car, driving well under the speed limit, riding low in the back, and those cars had already been stopped and determined to be smuggling non-citizens. And so given all that, I think the agent had certainly cleared the low bar of reasonable suspicion of some wrongdoing here. I don't have much to add to the letter I submitted to the court last week on the issue of the extension. It is the government's view that the burden was not satisfied either in the district court or in this court for a bond pending appeal. We do believe that's the applicable statutory subsection, given that the defendant was fully sentenced. There's no aspect of sentencing that's left pending. She had been ordered to surrender by the district court. She'd been given a surrender date by BOP. There's nothing left to execute on the sentence in terms of, in terms of judicial process. Her sentence had been executed. It was just a matter of her showing up at the facility. She had been fully sentenced and appealed, and so I think 3143B1 is the squarely governing statutory provision, and I don't believe she's carried a burden under it. And so if the court has nothing further, the government would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, counsel. And we'll hear rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the standard of review for the sentencing issue is de novo review. We're determining whether those facts rise to the level of this application of the sentencing enhancement. There is the question the government has brought up about, well, what are the facts and can we treat the district court's statements as factual findings? I would say no, because they are not reasonable inferences from the limited facts that were before the court, which are no more than what this court has before it. I think the Rodriguez case is a good example of that. There, the district court had relied on the fact that Rodriguez did a U-turn on I-35 at 11 p.m. at night and said that was dangerous driving that, you know, warranted application of the enhancement in addition to the passengers being stacked. And this court said that that was not a reasonable inference, something they would defer to, because there were not any facts establishing what was the traffic like on I-35. Was it actually an illegal driving maneuver? Was anyone actually placed at risk in those? And so that's in the last part of that Rodriguez case. The main bulk of what we remember Rodriguez for is that there were three people stacked in the cargo area, and that was a finding. I think it was based on an agent's description. And this court still reversed in there. So being stacked simply is not enough. And that also was the circumstance in the first Hernandez case when it was on plain error review. And all the district court had was that the passengers were stacked in the cargo area, and this court reversed on plain error. And then, you know, then there was the resentencing with some additional evidence, like they couldn't open the door. And when the agent, even using the keys, couldn't open the door of that back area, yes, that rises to inability to exit. But not these circumstances here where we have
no... How is the person on the floor supposed to get out of the car?
Just like a person riding in the middle seat, wait for the others to exit.
So there's three people on top of that person. The person is so concealed that even after the agent stops the car and interviews the three on top, doesn't even realize that there's a fourth person on the floorboard of a Corolla. It's not the cargo area of a van. I mean, it's a very small car with four grown adults stacked on top of each other. I don't understand how we would be able to hold that fourth person, to say nothing of the other three, but just focus on the fourth person, mm-hmm. how that person could reasonably exit the vehicle.
So just like a person who's in the middle of a seven-seater SUV, You have to wait your turn. It's difficult. Cars have, you know, seats have to get moved, doors have to get open, and then you get out. But the standard is can the person exit quickly like the person next to the door? It's whether there's a substantial difficulty in exiting the vehicle, and that is not shown by the person on the floorboard. And I would also say that the tight statement by the district court about the space is also unsupported, because we don't know the size of these individuals, exactly where their legs were, where those front seats were, what the dimensions were, and we don't know how long that person was on the floorboard either.
We know it's a Corolla with six people, six adults.
Yes.
People in the front and the back. I'm sorry, both of the front seats are occupied.
Correct.
And there's four people in the back seat.
Correct.
As to the speed of the fourth person getting out of the car, how can we say that it is unreasonable for the district court to say that, because I want to go back to something you said at the very beginning, which is, well, I think a reasonable inference of this is that the three people in the back, not on the floorboard, mm-hmm. were wearing seatbelts and laying sideways.
Mm-hmm.
How geometrically, I don't even understand how you would put three adults in seatbelts laying sideways. Is that the idea?
Right.
On top of the fourth person. Where are their feet?
On the floor.
On the fourth person.
No, not on the floor person, or the floor person is in front of them. Again, that goes to the lack of evidence of the space in the back seat of the Toyota Corolla.
But your view is that we can look at this and say Chief Judge Moses clearly erred in finding the facts that she found, and then instead the facts are the way that your client would have them.
Correct. I don't think those facts were reasonable inferences from the limited information that was in the PSR. And even if they were, I don't think they rise to the level that this court has held in the past substantiates a risk of substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, counsel. We have your arguments, and the matter will be considered submitted. I misspoke earlier. I